Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
On May 21, 2011, when the rapture occurs, that's 5 times 10 times 17. Wow, that just fits perfectly.
With camping, it's very hard to get seriously because, to be perfectly blunt, there's a kook element involved.
I don't expect everyone to understand this, but I'm a believer and a follower of Jesus Christ. And that relationship is far more important to me than any political office.
Without these bold men who were not pastors confessing the faith, who knows where we would be today?
I'm Derek, the tea guy from Seward, Nebraska, who drives his truck through Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, and I rock Issues Etc. the whole way.
Well, it's going to be big news today and tomorrow, and then on Sunday probably will not be even in the news anymore. Very quickly forgotten, as failed predictions often are. Very few remember his first prediction, Harold Camping's prediction of the end of the world in 1994 that came and went. So this will probably very quickly be a distant memory. What's more interesting in the meantime, as we wait for the 21st to come and go, is not just the prediction of a rapture on the 21st of May 2011 from Harold Camping, but the way the media is covering both the prediction and Christians' response to that prediction. Just one of the stories we're going to be talking about with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway to kick off this hour of Issues Etc. live this Friday, May the 20th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later, Issues Etc. comment line. We've got a comment line full of your listener comments. We'll play and respond to those comment line comments. Then, Issues Etc. soundbite of the week is our usual fare on Fridays. This Friday is no different. We have 4 soundbites from our Issues Etc. audio this week that we're going to play for you, and then you get your chance to call, email, or tweet your vote to us and pick Issues Etc. soundbite of the week on this Friday afternoon. 1-877-623-6943. Talkback at issuesetc.org. That Twitter address at issuesetc. And you can also vote for soundbite of the week at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. If you want to listen to the soundbites of the week in advance, you can hear them at our website, issuesetc.org. Joining us to talk about the media coverage of Harold Camping's prediction and several other stories of religious import in the media, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's nice to be here.
There seems to be those two angles, covering camping and covering Christians responding to camping. How do you think the media is doing in both those respects?
Well, you know, for a somewhat fringe group, this group has received a ton of media coverage, and it's been going on all year. And at first, it seemed that there were problems with some details. Like you just mentioned, that this guy had come up with a previous date for the rapture, which was back in 1994. But if you look at early reports on this group, people weren't even mentioning that. And so there wasn't a lot of context or understanding of the group or description of the guy. You know, just today I read my first really good piece explaining the serious lack of theological training that Harold Camping has. I mean, he doesn't claim otherwise. He will fully acknowledge that he's not a pastor, never went to seminary, and that he's a self-taught Bible guy. We shouldn't have to wait till today after the media has been hyping this, like the story of the year, to get these kinds of details. Actually, I don't think I've seen. I mean, some of the early stories did a pretty good job of explaining how fringe this group's views were, and I suppose that's an appropriate way to handle it. But I don't know if I've seen enough good stuff on how Christians in general view fringe prophecy figures like this.
You pay attention to a CNBC coverage of this, where they portray it as Christians kind of defending the brand. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I read this story by a reporter who I actually, you know, really like, and his whole thing about what Christians were doing when they point out the errors, or what they view as the errors in the camping prophecy, is that they're doing nothing more than brand identity management. And it was just funny to read because, you know, in my church, we do this every week. We discuss not just what we believe, but what we don't believe, what other people believe, how that differs from what we believe. This is something we do literally all the time. And if you read scripture, it's something that, you know, Christians are commanded to do. They're told there will be false prophets, false teachers, and that you're supposed to not just talk about what you do believe or confess what you do believe, but you're also supposed to study and confess what you don't believe and point out the errors and false teachers. I mean, I've never really heard of this particular studying of beliefs in terms of brand identity and management. And it was just funny because the piece didn't even mention that Christians do this all the time. This is what Bible study is frequently. And, you know, there are books written all the time analyzing views that are in the culture, in the church, and where they're right and where they're wrong. Peace just didn't mention it at all, and they got lots of quotes from people, you know, trying to claim that this was about brand identity and management. It was just kind of curious.
I think this is a quote, and I'd like your reaction to it. Scholars are whacking at camping like a cheap pinata, but this isn't a sign that they consider his work worthy of attention. They're worried what people will think about Christians if they don't rebut him. You say you don't know a single Christian who thinks this way.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I suppose it's possible that there are people who are whacking at camping like a cheap pinata, not because they think he's worthy of attention, but because they're worried about their brand identity. But I just don't think that's the way a Christian would put it. I haven't really heard people speak this way. And also, in general, I think Christians do find false teachings very worthy of attention. You know, there's never been a standard that just because a view is crazy, you don't give it attention. I mean, the Da Vinci Code was an absolutely ludicrous book, but it was totally, you know, if you look at it this way, unworthy of attention. It was a laugh. It was a joke. You have to be an idiot to believe it. But of course, we respond to it because people do believe it, and particularly when the media hype something, like they've hyped this particular story, you have to pay attention to it because it's out there in the culture, and that's what Christians do. So it just seemed kind of tone-deaf and weird to me. But I'm also willing to be open to the idea that maybe my own experience is very insular here, and that there are people out there that are doing nothing more than brand management. I just wasn't quite sure the story made the case.
Your prediction, because we're talking about a matter of days here in a 24-hour news cycle that has made a lot of camping. I even heard here on the local blowtorch radio station in the St. Louis area driving into work today, one of the reporters going to the news by talking about the weather on Sunday and prefacing it by saying, if we're still here. So it's permeated, you know, even down to the local level of how people are thinking about the weekend's news. Your prediction for Sunday's news on this?
Right. You'd think maybe we won't have the same level of coverage of Family Radio Network and Herald Camping as we've had in the week leading up to it. I think that would probably be right. This fits so perfectly into our modern media culture. We love having an outlet like this where we can make jokes and we can, find stories that we can fill. It's a made for the current media cycle type of story. I actually will be curious to see what happens in the aftermath. I mean, obviously, I think there will be a lot of curiosity about how camping's followers are going to feel should the end of the world not happen, or should the rapture not happen this weekend. So I think we will see some good follow-ups. I hope so. And other than that, I'm not sure what to expect with the media attention.
Well, talking about another made-for-the-media story, refresh our memories, if you would, on former New Jersey Governor James McCreevy. What's the story now?
Right. So James McCreevy was the governor of New Jersey who was about to be... there was about to be a public scandal where basically he had engaged in some pretty serious nepotism by putting either his sexual partner or someone that he was sexually harassing into a really high position. The guy wasn't even American. He was Israeli, I think, and he was put into a very high terror-related position, a terrorism-fighting position, and he felt that he had been sexually harassed by the governor, and he was about to go public with it. And James McGreevy did this very interesting thing where rather than deal with those accusations of corruption or whatnot, he outed himself as a gay American. He gave this press conference where he said, "My truth is that I am a gay American," with, I will point out, his wife and daughter standing there, or his wife was standing right there, I think. And anyway, it was a quite dramatic scandal. Those of us that enjoy political scandals had a lot of fun there. But what was really interesting is that shortly thereafter, he announced he wanted to be an Episcopal priest. And so he was in seminary. And so there was some interesting coverage there. More recently, it was revealed by a number of different outlets that his request for the next, next step in the ordination track had been denied, and that the Episcopal diocese there in New Jersey had decided that he needed some more time. He'd just switched religions. He'd just switched his public sexual orientation, and they thought that maybe this was all sort of too much too soon, or that's what's been reported. And so we saw another little rash of stories in the last week or so, culminating with this week, a really fascinating profile in the New York Times. It was an incredibly favorable profile of McGreevy, which is, you know, perhaps not all that surprising. But I also found that it, upon second reading, might not have been as puffy as an initial reading would indicate.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, why wasn't it as puffy as Molly expected? We're talking about media coverage of several issues pertaining to religion with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Friday afternoon, May the 20th. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
Did God really create the world in 6 24-hour days? And what difference does it make? The Issues Etc. book of the month for May is In the Beginning, God, Creation from God's Perspective. It's written by regular guest Dr. Joel Heck. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase In the Beginning, God by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, In the Beginning, God.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway of GetReligion.org about the media's coverage of several stories. Before the break, Molly, you mentioned that the piece you had seen on Jim McCreevy's hopes to become a priest, or on the latest story involving him in the media, perhaps wasn't as puffy as you thought it was at first. What did you find there?
Well, I mean, there was literally not a negative word in the entire profile. It was nothing but, you know, favorable quotes about this man and how much good work he was doing and how everything was coming up roses now that he was out as a gay man with a partner and he's doing all this good work at this counseling center. But hidden, sort of, in the middle of the story is a description of how he's had addiction issues, including a lifelong addiction to having a public, and how he is wanting his life to be organized in harmony. And then you sort of realize, oh, this entire story is nothing but a campaign for ordination. And he's not only, you know, he's either been soliciting a profile in the New York Times or he's been responding to the calls of a New York Times reporter, and he's talking himself up in the pages of the New York Times. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, I think, you know, there might be a deeper meaning here. This guy might have serious addiction issues that are not in any way resolved. It was a very subtle twist. So it's either the puffiest piece you can imagine, but I know this reporter does good enough work that I kind of have a hard time believing that, or it's almost a very sad piece about a really sad individual with some serious problems.
What does it say about the degree to which, saying nothing about the reporter in this particular case, but what does it say about the degree to which the media can be manipulated by someone who's savvy enough to tell the stories they want to tell?
Well, you know, there's that, but I think also sometimes the media just, there are figures that they like more than other figures. And this guy, everyone says, you know, he's always been an amazing campaigner. I think that reporters are really good about being suspicious if they have, you know, if they don't agree with someone politically or religiously or otherwise. Sometimes it's harder for them to be suspicious, which actually is a good trait in a reporter, in my view. Or to ask probing questions or more difficult questions when they are sort of on the same team as that reporter. And so you can see that problem gets exacerbated in profiles, and it's not just of guys like McGreevy, it's of a lot of different people.
Finally, let's talk about this church in West Palm Beach, Florida, Holy Name of Jesus Catholic Church, and Henry Borga, and what you say is kind of a mess of media coverage.
So there's a guy, he pays $10 for a mass intention. So it's like a special mass offered in the name of someone who's died at his local Catholic church. And he pays $10 so that someone will do a mass intention for Osama bin Laden. So obviously this goes over like a lead balloon. Parishioners are angry. The local community is outraged. And then goes national and worldwide. And, you know, it's a really interesting story. It could have been used as a way to talk about Catholic beliefs, about the dead, about praying for the dead, about what the Christian posture on your enemies is supposed to be, what it means when the scriptures tell us to pray for our enemies, what a mass intention is. Why do you pay money for these things? I mean, there were so many interesting questions that could have been explored. But instead, it was just kind of a mishmash of random information and mistruth. One Miami-based NBC affiliate, their headline for the piece was literally something like, Holy Roller Defends Bin Laden Prayer Request. Now, it was a Catholic, and we don't use the term Holy Roller in journalism in general, but if you're going to use it, you really normally would not use it on a Catholic. It usually refers to a certain group of Protestant Christians, of Pentecostal Christians, who engage in a certain type of worship that's very physical. But it was just, you know, it was just a mess. There was a lot of religious ignorance going on in the reporting, and I've actually yet to see anything particularly good explaining some of these more interesting details.
Wouldn't you use the term Holy Roller generally in journalism only if the person who's going to bear that moniker self-identifies themselves that way?
I mean, I could see it basically being used in a quote. You could even see it being used if someone was accusing someone of being a holy roller and then explaining it. But no, I'm not thinking any journalist of their worth would recommend putting it in the headline, particularly when describing a group that has heretofore never been described that way.
I mean, you mentioned this before, but it seems to me the real story here isn't the fact that the person or the person's intentions. The real story here is what does this mean? What does it mean that a Mass would be said for Osama bin Laden? What does it mean in the Roman Catholic context? And then again, more broadly, in the scriptural context.
Well, and what's so weird, you know, I cover religion all the time. Obviously, Catholics get the bulk of the media coverage. And I still was reading these stories having no response other than a ton of questions in my head. And I'm thinking, if I'm a religion reporter and I'm just full of questions about what this all means and how this works in a typical Catholic church and everything, I can't even imagine what, you know, some casual reader who doesn't even care that much about religion coverage might think upon encountering this story linked off the Drudge Report. So it's just kind of a big whiff, a swing and a miss by many journalists this week.
You mentioned the Drudge Report. Often stories that would be only local or of only passing interest are rocketed to national attention by inclusion there. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It could be a good thing or a bad thing. I think one thing that people didn't realize at first with Matt Drudge is that he does have, like everyone else in the world, a particular worldview. He advances certain stories. Sure, most of those stories involve, like, strippers, cats, dogs, tornadoes, stuff like that. But you know, he has an eye for the tabloid culture. What's going to get people clicking? What's going to get people coming back to his site? And he's done a really good job, I think, of mixing light and fluffy stuff with more serious political stuff. There's certainly a lot you could complain about there, but news aggregators provide a wonderful service, I think. And a lot of us don't have the time to scroll for news on our own or search for news on our own. And so we do rely on people like Matt Drudge or people, you know, in other parts of the political spectrum to help us save that time and find stories of interest to us.
Would you offer a word of caution that just because it's a link on Drudge doesn't necessarily mean it's news?
I would offer that caution. I would also, I mean, there's that issue. There's also the issue that sometimes a link does not accurately describe the story, or when you read the story, you realize that the headline for the story or the link for the story is does a really poor job of explaining the complicated nature of the story. You know, there are all sorts of problems with just clicking on something or not even bothering to click. I mean, usually what people do, I think, if we're honest, is just scan the few words that are linked, and we don't even bother linking on the piece, but we sort of accept whatever the link says without even any further investigation on our own. And, you know, you can look at it in terms of, say there's a poll result or something. You see what the poll result is in a link, but you don't know anything about the quality of the polling firm, what types of questions they asked to get that result, what their sample size was, what the date of this polling was. I mean, you'll know nothing about it. So you have to be really skeptical, even if you're using these other services. They're just a tool, and they don't give you an excuse to check your brain at the door or stop being that savvy media consumer that you need to be if you want to be an informed and thoughtful person in the world today.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.